good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on what looks to be the first day of winter out there, doesn't it? Yes. Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. It's not that bad. In fact, it's not bad at all, but just the first time you see snow, you kind of cringe a little bit. Here in the Butler area right now, the immediate Butler area, it's a very light but steady snow. I'm not sure it's going to amount to anything, but it's out there. By the way, the weather folks told us this morning that there was a chance we could get it. They were getting much heavier snow north of us, up around Erie and Buffalo. It's kind of drifted south a little bit. So it feels like winter, and it kind of looks like it now, too. We have an Ask the Lawyer segment today. It's one of our more popular features that we do periodically here on the It's Your Turn program. Coming up a little bit later, we're going to be talking about the it's an annual program that is spearheaded by St. Barnabas Health System. They call it Presence for Patients. They have been partners with WPXI Television, Channel 11, on this for many, 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 many years. We're scheduled to chat with Valerie Day Weldon later on the program about that. But first, we welcome local attorney Michael Russell. He is with Conlon Tarker, and he focuses a lot on workmen's compensation. That's what we're going to talk about today. First of all, Michael Russell, welcome. Nice to have you here. Nice to talk to you today.
Great to be here, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we always mention when we're talking with professionals, whether it's doctors or financial planners, that opinions expressed on the program today are those of our guest and me and callers, and they're presented for informational and educational purposes only. As always, for specific legal advice, listeners are advised to consult their own attorney. And we'll tell you a little bit about how to do that later on the program if you don't have an attorney. We'll direct you to Janice Hackett up at the law office, the Butler County Bar Association. But first of all, let's talk a little bit about workman's compensation, or commonly called workman's comp. Is it the same thing, Mike?
It is one and the same thing, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just start at the beginning here and just do a little primer so that everybody understands what we're talking about. I'm sure everybody has heard the term workman's comp, even if they've never had to go through the process. Probably know somebody that has. What exactly is it? It's an insurance program, really, isn't it?
Yes, essentially work comp is, if you get injured at work, the system is designed that your sole remedy is to the work comp system. You can't sue your employer. So when you have an injury at work, you file a workers' compensation claim, and there's technicalities and processes that you go through to get to that point, but you report it to your employer as the first step. They notify the compensation carrier, and then most of your interaction from that point forward is with the work comp carrier. Various carriers provide insurance through the Pennsylvania, and then they pay benefits based upon your injury of different sorts.
Can you ever, some of my questions are probably going to be kind of silly to somebody that focuses on this for their entire career, but can you ever decline, I'm talking now about an employee who is injured on the job, can you ever decline workman's comp and in fact, on your own, try to sue your employer, or is that not allowed?
You cannot do that. Your exclusive remedy is to the Comp Act. So 99% of the clients that we represent have their only remedy in the work comp act. So they can't decide they just want to sue their employer independently for negligence. It's just not an option for you. The only real exception to that is if somebody outside of your employer caused your injury. If you're a traveling salesman and you drive down the road, somebody goes through an intersection and runs into you, you have a separate claim against that driver, but you still have a sole remedy to go against your work comp carrier for those benefits that you're entitled to through work comp.
So if you're the injured party, you have to go through workman's comp. On the other hand, employers, businesses, it's mandated, is it not, that by the state that they buy this insurance? There's no choice.
Right, it is. If you have a single employee in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and you do not maintain workers' comp insurance, you are in violation of the act and subject to criminal penalties. And actually, I guess going back on what I said a moment ago, the only time you can sue your employer is if they don't have insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So if your employer elects not to obtain work comp insurance and you have an injury and file a claim against them and it's ultimately determined that they do not carry work comp, you can then withdraw that claim and sue your employer independently under basically a negligence theory. You have to prove more under those circumstances than you do in a comp claim. But that, I guess, going back on what I said earlier, that is the only exception to your remedy being under the Work Comp Act.
Do companies buy this insurance exclusively through the state, or can they shop around just like you or I might shop around for auto insurance?
They can shop around. There is a state program called the State Workers Insurance Fund that provides insurance, but work comp insurance is also through Liberty Mutual, Travelers, and various other insurance carriers across the Commonwealth. You also have the right to be self-insured if you're an employer, but that is typically reserved for substantial size employers that have the ability to put sufficient bond aside to protect their workers. So those are few and far between in our state.
Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of the basics about what workman's comp is. We still haven't talked about how attorneys come into play yet. So let's take a hypothetical example here. Somebody is on the job, could be anything. Maybe they're a painter and they fall off a ladder or something, injure their shoulder, and they file a workman's compensation claim because, well, let's make it an example. They're unable to work for a while. And they're seeking reimbursement for the wages that they're losing, right?
Right. So what would happen under that circumstance when the lawyer gets involved, there's essentially two times that us as attorneys are involved. So we'll take your example at the outset, which is somebody had an injury at work. They lose wages and or incur medical expenses. That's reported to the employer, reported to the carrier, and then the carrier has a decision to make. They're supposed to make that within 21 days, but quite frankly, nobody's leaning over their shoulder to make sure they do that.
Mm-hmm.
If the claim is accepted, I don't usually see that client. They're getting paid. They get paid different rates, somewhere between 90% and two-thirds of their average weekly wage in work comp tax-free. So I don't end up seeing that client until later down in the road when something's happening and the carrier's trying to cut them off. When I see those clients is when the carrier, for whatever reason, has elected to deny the claim. And they deny the claim, and then the person's now without income and or incurring medical expenses with no way to pay for them.
And this is when a person would theoretically retain you.
Right, exactly. So they'll end up calling us. Some claimants will try to do that on their own, but it's quite frankly very difficult. So we'll end up getting that call, and then we proceed to file what's called a claim petition for workers' compensation in Harrisburg, which is then assigned to a judge for adjudication.
So a judge is the ultimate decider here. He determines whether the injured party gets paid or whether the insurance company can deny the claim.
That is correct. So the judge will ultimately get the assignment of the petition, and we'll have typically two or three, sometimes more depending on the complexity of the case, hearings. And during that time, we're securing medical depositions and testimony, and ultimately the judge is the arbiter and makes that decision on whether or not to grant the claim petition.
So obviously it's not the same as a criminal trial, but it's somewhat analogous. You're before a judge, you present testimony, and as you said, medical records and so on, and then it's just the judge. There's no juries involved here.
Right. There is no jury in the work comp system. It is one judge who makes
that. Is it just one judge, not a, what do they call that,
a panel?
On bank or something?
Yeah, that would be a panel. We just deal with one judge.
One judge.
Yep.
Are these our regular common pleas court judges?
No, these are judges appointed by the executive branch, various judges in various counties.
So that's all they do?
Yep.
Workman's comp decision.
Yes, that's all they do.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's interesting. How long can a person claim workman's compensation? What if it's a disabling injury, a permanent injury? They're never going to be able to work again.
Well, technically, a claimant can receive compensation benefits for the duration of their life. The reality is that doesn't happen very frequently. There are various mechanisms an employer and carrier can use to get people off of work compensation. But if it was a catastrophic injury, and we've had many of those where an individual is never going to return to work, they can technically get benefits until the day they pass away. There was a recent Supreme Court decision that allowed the that overturned a portion of the act that allowed compensation carriers to even limit people like that to 500 weeks of benefits. It's now unconstitutional, so we're back to what I started with 25 years ago, where from a purely technical perspective, you could get it as long as you're alive if you can continue to maintain a level of disability that prevents you from working.
And there's no maximum dollar amount, no threshold that cuts it off?
Nope. No, there's a maximum threshold per week that you can get, but that's your weekly benefit based upon your compensation that you received prior to your injury, but you can get it forever.
Folks, any questions on workman's comp? We welcome them. We'll do our best to give you general answers. Obviously, you know, if a specific case, we can talk about it, but that's something you need to discuss with your attorney. 283-2525, our number, 283-2525, if you have questions. I still have a lot more as well. 283-2525. So this is a state-run program then. Does every state in the United States, are they all mandated to maintain these workman comp insurance programs?
I can't speak to every state, but the majority of the states do have some form or fashion of a work comp program. They're quite different. There are some states like Ohio that we call an impairment state, which is what the Supreme Court on the decision I mentioned recently was. They tried to convert Pennsylvania, at least in part, to an impairment rating state that would limit benefits based upon a percentage of whole person impairment. Ohio is an impairment state. I don't know all the details of it because I've practiced exclusively in Pennsylvania, but Pennsylvania is what we call disability state. So as long as you're disabled, you receive it, and they can't limit you based upon an impairment. But most states, as far as I know, do have some varying form of work comp, but they are dramatically different depending upon the type of benefits.
So this is just like I'm trying to think of something that's analogous. Election laws. Every state has their own. They differ drastically from,
right.
You know, who can vote at a primary, when you can register, when the election is. It's all done by the individual states.
Absolutely. Yeah. And comp is the same way.
What about if you work for, I don't know, the FBI or any federal governmental agency? Are you covered by the state in which you live, or does the federal government have its own plan?
The federal government indeed has its own plan. I've never practiced in it. It is a very, very specialized field. There are very few attorneys that I know of, in fact, that practice under the OWCP. It's called Office of Workers' Compensation Programs. The federal government, for any federal employee, if somebody from the post office up the street calls me, I can't help them because our statute does not cover a federal employee. They need to go to the OWCP to obtain benefits.
Already, listeners, you can see my head's kind of spinning around already, and we've just kind of scratched the surface here. For the average person who doesn't deal with this, it would be mind-blowing, really.
Indeed. And comp lawyers are a special breed, a specialist breed. There is a certification now that went into place about 3 years that allows us to become a specialist in the practice of workers' compensation benefits. I am one of them, so it's a unique field that you have to maintain a regular practice in and really get to know because it is dramatically different than general law.
So who keeps track of that? State officials? They know that you're a specialist in this area?
Yeah, we had to do some things. We had to take some testing. We had to demonstrate that we have a particular amount of our practice over the past 5 years and our training, or what we call continuing legal education, CLE, we have to have 75% of that in the past and ongoing in the field of workers' compensation so that we can maintain that specialty certification.
Don't tell me these rules change every year like the IRS does.
They do indeed.
Oh, great.
the act isn't changed all that often, the actual act, but in terms of case precedent that determines how that act is applied, it changes daily. And that's the same for just about any area of practice. I mean, the courts are always interpreting the act in different manners.
Our phone number is 283-2525. If you have any questions about workman's comp or a claim being denied, 283-2525. Some cases, I would think, would be pretty much cut and dried. I mean, or is this one of those things that's, you know, like I've heard horror stories about Social Security disability where, you know, people tell me, well, they just automatically deny it the first time. Does that happen sometimes with workman's comp, or are there some cases that are so obvious that the insurance company just goes ahead and pays the claim?
I would say that there are some that are cut and dried, mm-hmm. but work comp is never cut and dried. So that brings me to what I said a moment ago, which is the first time we would be involved is when somebody has been denied. But even on those what we would call cut and dried cases, obvious injuries, guy falls off a ladder, breaks his ankle, comp's very rarely going to deny that type of claim. The question then on that claim is how long that person's going to receive comp.
Okay, yeah.
So that's a second area where us lawyers get involved, because the guy will be on comp for 6 months or a year. They have the right to get them examined, and then we proceed to litigation over whether or not they get to keep their benefits. So that's the second area where work comp lawyers get involved in these claims. So even in those cut and dried claims, they're not cut and dried for very long, because ultimately we're fighting over other issues, namely the disability associated with it, or the description of injury, or what actually happened, and various different fights.
And I suppose in some cases, not all, but, you know, it's the sexy ones that we hear about on TV where, you know, somebody is on disability and says they can never work again, and, you know, they see them out playing golf every day of the week. I'm sure insurance companies have investigators who go around trying to check for fraud.
They do. They do. It's not as, I guess, not as common as I would believe the media has made it, but there are occasions. I would probably say less than 10% of the cases that I'm involved in, and there's a lot of those. Probably less than 10%, we get surveillance involved. Most of the time, it doesn't show us anything of huge significance, at least for me as a claimant's lawyer. Now, the defense lawyer obviously has a different opinion on what that surveillance reveals about my client's capability or capacity to return to work. But, yeah, we do see surveillance fairly regularly where they have our clients under surveillance and catch them doing activities that they would normally do.
When is it advisable for a person who's filed a claim to seek the advice of attorney to retain an attorney? Let's take the example we've been talking about already. A house painter falls off a ladder, breaks his ankle. Generally speaking, you know, 6 weeks to heal a broken bone, that's pretty standard. Maybe another few weeks while you're in rehab. Climbing a ladder is not something you'd probably do the day that you got the doctor's clearance. But then you get a letter from the insurance company that says, okay, we're cutting off the workman's comp. You've had enough time. Is that when you, or do you?
Well, I would say two things. First of all, most comp claims now, even those cut and dried ones that we've talked about, are accepted by a document called a Notice of Temporary Compensation Payable. It's one of the two ways a claim can be recognized. A Notice of Compensation Payable or Temporary Compensation Payable gives the carrier 90 days to revoke that, we'll call it an NTCP, for any reason. Mm-hmm. So the goal, obviously, from the insurance carrier is to get somebody back to work within those 90 days so that they can then issue a denial. So obviously, if you're off work, if you're that painter and you're still off work and don't feel that you can return to your job, if the carrier believes you can, or they have some suspicion that you can, they can deny it. And they can technically deny it for any reason they so desire. They don't even have to really provide a reason. It's a form, and they check one of the five boxes.
And they mail it to you.
And they mail it to you. And your comp is cut off at that point in time. So if it's in that first 90 days and you're still off work, you need to get a lawyer. Once you get beyond that 90 days, you're a little safer, because then that notice of temporary compensation payable converts to a notice of compensation payable. Payments are all the same. Doesn't change anything relative to the payments. What it does mean is that from that point forward, the only way the compensation carrier can quit paying you is if you sign off, settle your case, or go back to work and sign one of the varying agreements that we have to effectuate the stoppage of your benefits, or a judge cuts you off. I recommend to most clients, even when they call me and they don't have a problem, and that happens frequently, so they get scheduled for an exam, they're still receiving their benefits, but they call with questions. I want to know what my rights are. I want to know what I need to do. Quite honestly, I recommend that those clients, if you're on comp and you've been on comp for more than a few months, you ought to seek counsel, because there's things that we can do as a claimant's attorney to protect your right to maintain benefits, and protect you in the likely event that you're heading toward litigation, because it happens in probably 99% of the cases.
And I'm guessing that the wheels of justice move slowly, as they do in the regular court system. So an individual, a claimant, could be without their workman's comp check for weeks, months.
Longer than that.
Longer than that?
Absolutely. So the normal course of our process is, if it's denied, even if they get to me immediately, and let's say it was denied 2 weeks later, I think we have a case, I file a claim petition. Typically takes the Bureau's gone electronic now, so it's a lot faster, but we still don't have our first hearing, usually 6 weeks approximately.
Oh, wow.
And the purpose of that hearing is simply to take some testimony from the injured worker so that they can tell the judge what happened. After that hearing, and that's just the first hearing, so it's not like you go to a jury trial or a criminal trial or a negligence trial, the jury hears the evidence and they put the gavel down. Comp doesn't work that way. We file an immediate petition, have a first hearing, a claimant testifies, the claimant's the injured worker, and that's what we call them. And then from that point, the employer typically, in the lion's share of those cases, will get my client examined by what we call an independent medical exam, somebody hired by the insurance company. There's varying doctors around that do those. If that examination is favorable to my client, the carrier typically has to throw in the towel. But if it's not, litigation continues. And we would typically have at least two subsequent hearings between the first and the second hearing. I've got to go take testimony from my doctor to establish the nature of the injury, the disability, the medical, etc. We go into the second hearing, I hand in my transcript. Then the employer goes and takes testimony from their doctor. So most of those claims are in litigation for upwards of 9 months.
So meantime, the claimant, the injured worker, is without his workman's comp check. If you're, you know, if you're relying on that for mortgage payment, car payment, food,
right,
utility bills, I mean, that's a disastrous amount of time.
Yes, it's a very difficult issue, and so we have clients that honestly lose everything. I have clients that end up losing their home. I've had clients lose gun collections or watch collections that have been passed down for millennia from their family. So a lot of them lose everything while they're waiting for the wheels of justice to get a final decision, which quite frankly typically is not often sooner than a year.
We're talking about workman's compensation insurance, or everybody calls it workman's comp, and that's the term we're using too. It's a shortened version. It's the same thing. With us is local attorney Michael Russell. He is with the firm of Conlon Tarker, well-known law firm here in Butler. But in chatting with Michael before we were on the air today, I was surprised, astonished, really, at your geographical territory. You have these hearings all over central and western Pennsylvania.
Indeed. I always tell people I travel from Erie to Washington, and out to State College and just about everywhere in between.
I want to talk more about workman's comp in just a moment. I'm going to take a break here for a message or two, and then we'll pick up our conversation with attorney Michael Russell. One of our sponsors on the program is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. It's Christmas time, and boy, when you're making out your Christmas list, if you could see your way clear to put the Society of St. Vincent de Paul down there at the bottom of the list, they would be most grateful. Most grateful, whether it's a monetary donation, a donation to the food bank, maybe a donation of time. You can volunteer an hour or so a week in the coming new year. That would be great. Yeah, and don't forget their thrift store. If you're cleaning in preparation for guests coming over the holidays and you've got stuff that's going to go, whether it's clothing or shoes or miscellaneous or furniture or whatever, don't just throw it out. It goes to the landfill. Consider donating those items to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. Somebody else will be able to use them. And every penny that comes from sales at the thrift store stays right here in Butler County to help support the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank and their client aid program. And from the bottom of the hearts of all of the volunteers and the folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, thank you for your generosity. And Merry Christmas to all. The thrift store, by the way, is located in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8 South. It's open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. We will be back right after these words.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back, good friends. We're talking about workman's comp. It's a complicated subject, even just in our preliminary discussions here with attorney Michael Russell. I can understand how so many people would be confused, worried, frustrated when they're dealing with some of these issues where a claim is denied for a lengthy period of time. Michael Russell is a local attorney. He is a certified specialist in workman's compensation law. That is certainly the focus of his practice. And he is with the Conlon Tarker Law Firm there on East Diamond Street in downtown Butler. Oh, and by the way, our phone number, if you have questions in addition to mine, feel free to join us, 283-2525, 283-2525. What if a worker is injured through their own fault? What if they did something really stupid, or they didn't follow the safety procedures, obviously their fault, and I got a broken leg or a broken ankle or something. Does that make any difference? Can you still, if you were injured on a job, can you still file a claim?
You can. That's one of the unique aspects of the Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Act. The difference between an injury, if you're out walking and you slip and fall somewhere, you have to prove a negligence burden. You have to establish that there's something they did wrong caused your injury.
They didn't take the ice off their sidewalk or whatever.
Exactly. So the difference in work comp is we don't care what the cause of the accident is as long as it happened at work. So even in those type of scenarios that you've mentioned where you do something that you shouldn't have done, you still get paid work comp because you were injured in the context of work. So if you reach your hand into a saw, the employer, and I've had this happen, where an employer said you've got to make sure the saw is shut off, you need to disconnect the airline, you need to go follow these safety procedures. Even if you violate that and stick your hand in the saw and cut your fingers, you still get paid work comp. That changed for a little bit based upon some court precedent, but we've come back around now to where unless you're doing something outside of what your normal job is, if you're a saw operator and you decide to walk over to some other area and do something different, then you're taking yourself outside of the bounds of your position and you can be prevented from receiving comp in those circumstances. So as long as you're performing your position and you get injured while performing your position, again, summarizing, you're technically covered under the Comp Act.
What sort of expenses does workers' comp cover? You mentioned medical expenses. Okay, so you break your ankle, you got to go to the orthopedic surgeon. Maybe you need surgery and get some screws in there, or maybe just a cast, whatever. What about pain and suffering? You hear that a lot in legal terms. You hear that a lot on the TV shows, the TV lawyer shows.
Yep.
Pain and suffering. Can you claim that under workman's comp?
Well, that's a very good question, and that flows right from our last question. So our system is designed such that even if you make a mistake, you get paid. Even if the injury's no fault of anybody, you get paid. But in exchange for that system, I think the first act was passed in 1933, in exchange for that guarantee of payment, you receive very limited benefits. So we, quite frankly, as claimants' lawyers, have to deal with adjusting our clients' expectations of what they're going to receive. We all see in the news about these verdicts or settlements where people get significant money for pain. And
millions sometimes,
yes.
Yeah.
We don't see those in Pennsylvania work comp. In work comp, there are essentially two principal categories of benefits payable. One is wage loss. And so the first thing that happens in the comp claim is they go through your past earnings with this employer for a year before your accident, and they determine what your average weekly wage is. If that average weekly wage is $1,000, you get paid two-thirds of that in Pennsylvania work comp benefits tax-free. There are people there's several different classifications of benefits. If you earn a very small amount, you actually get 90%. And then there's a category where, and it changes every year, so I won't give you the numbers, but every year it changes. There's a second class that receives at a set number, 475. The people at the bottom of that salary range are getting 90%. The people at the top of that salary range are getting two-thirds. So it's kind of the transition from 90% to two-thirds.
Sounds like, at first blush, might be a little rough to make it on that percentage, but the key thing is it's tax-free,
it's
right?
Tax-free, yes. So that's we quite frequently deal with that, and people are complaining that they're not making what they used to, but in reality, they're probably close because they're not paying any taxes on it. So then we have a maximum. This year in 2017, the maximum was $975. Next year, it's going up a little bit, so those numbers change every year. The second category of benefits, of course, is medical, and comp has to pay every medical treatment, assuming it's related to the accepted injury. We fight over what the accepted injury is all the time. So comp carrier, you fall off the ladder, hurt your ankle, they accept whatever they want. They can say you hurt your pinky toe. But typically they try to make it relatively accurate, and I say relatively as a claimant's lawyer. But if they accept your ankle and then you need to go get medical care for your knee, you may end up fighting over whether or not they have to pay for that knee bill. That's why you need a lawyer, because then we're going to end up litigating over whether or not you also injured your knee. So those are the two principal classes of benefits that 98% of injured workers will receive. Two additional types of benefits that are available under the Pennsylvania Comp Act are disfigurement benefits. And believe it or not, those benefits are only payable for an individual if they have a scar on their head, face, or neck. So if you get burned over 90% of your body, but not your head, face, or neck, you get no disfigurement benefits. Rather, what I would consider a travesty in the law.
Yeah.
So I always say when my clients have scars, you're a 25-year-old young lady and you have a catastrophic burn on your entire arm, Comp Act doesn't care, and you don't get paid for that. Now, you might get paid wage benefits for as long as you're disabled, but a lot of scars or burn injuries don't result in much disability. The final area of benefits that you can receive payment are called specific loss benefits. So everything from your pinky finger, your pinky toe, to your part of your leg, part of your arm, your vision and your hearing all have set numbers of weeks attributed to them in the Comp Act. They're specifically designed. So if you lose an index finger or a thumb, you can receive, if it gets cut off, you can receive a set number of weeks for that lost digit. And they're all different. If they've paid you wage loss, though, they may get to subtract the wage loss they've paid you off that specific loss. So if you lose your entire arm, I believe, is 425 weeks. So if you get your arm cut off, you can get 425 weeks of benefits. But if they pay you for 5 years, they subtract that 5 years off the 425 weeks they give you.
See why you need an attorney, folks, whenever you're battling a workman's comp claim. By the way, is it pretty common? And I realize I'm not interested in the exact percentages. Probably not available anyway. But are people who are denied workman's comp claims, is this fairly common?
It is. It is indeed. And now with the development of the notice of temporary compensation payable, which wasn't available when I first started, so they had to make a hard decision as to whether or not they were going to accept it. And so they were more apt to deny a claim under those circumstances, because once they issued the notice of comp payable, they're stuck.
Let's take a couple of calls. Our phone number is 283-2525 if you have questions about... It's a pretty complicated subject, workman's comp. Our guest is Attorney Michael Russell. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn with Attorney Russell.
Hi, Dave. I had just a quick question, workman's comp.
Sure.
If you employer charges you your, keeps your health benefits up and then you return to work, would that be considered as lost wages? If they actually want to go back and retro charge you for your benefits that you didn't pay into the time you were on workman's comp and you were injured?
No, unfortunately, the bad answer for you on that question is health insurance benefits or other vested benefits like pension benefits are not considered income under the Pennsylvania Work Comp Act. So when you have an injury, most employers in the majority of claims do not continue to provide ongoing health benefits while somebody is off work. That happens more often than not. What you're dealing with is exactly what I see quite often. Probably had this conversation not more than a week ago with one of my clients who, exactly as you have indicated, was off work, if I'm understanding your question, was off work and received benefits that she would have normally contributed to for her health benefits, but obviously she's off work, so they're not taking it out of her salary, but they did nonetheless maintain those benefits. So that young lady went back to work, and the comp carrier, or the employer at this point now, says, well, wait a minute, we've been paying for your health insurance for the past 6 months. You owe us $1,000. And quite frankly, they can do that because work comp doesn't cover your health benefits. And I've run into that issue very frequently where people are in that same boat. And unfortunately, that's not even covered by the Comp Act, so that's between you and your employer. Your alternative, I guess, would be to say, well, I'm not going to pay you, in which case you don't have a job. But they certainly can try to back charge you for those benefits. Unfortunately, the Comp Act does not require an employer to maintain your position, to maintain your benefits, to maintain contributions to your pension or otherwise. And so that's why most carriers quit paying. Does that help? It's not good news, but...
It is what it is. I wasn't very clear on it, but you're saying that you cannot go back, to try to get a settlement to try to reclaim that as lost wages, so to speak.
Well, no, you cannot go back and reclaim those health benefits. Whether you could get a settlement's a different question. I mean, if you still have ongoing issues, even though you're back to work, if you might need future medical care, comp carriers are often willing to settle out those types of claims and pay you something rather than risk that you might come back. You can reopen your case, different statute of limitations, but about the lowest is if you've been off work for more than 3 months on an NCP and you go back to work, you can typically reopen that claim at worst 3 years from that point, and sometimes up to 500 weeks depending upon how the benefits ended.
Well, what a great question, caller. I never even thought about that. That's... Attorney Russell said it's not the answer you wanted to hear, but it was a great question.
We have that.
No, actually it doesn't. I mean, I wanted to hear the correct answer, not a bunch of smoke where you try to do something. But yeah, that answered my question. Hey, thank you.
Sure. Well, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, good question. Phone number is 283-2525. Workman's Comp is the topic of discussion today on Ask the Lawyer. And if you've just tuned in, maybe just got into the car or whatever, Michael Russell local attorney who is a certified specialist in workman's compensation law is with us today. He's with the law firm of Conlon Tarker here in Butler. This question of what your employer can do and can't do, this caller really opened up a whole new area for me. And it could be some pretty harsh answers here. Can an employer fire you at some point? Can an employer tell you or suggest that you do not file a workman's compensation claim?
Sure. On two different questions. On the latter, of course. Quite frankly, I use that term way too much, but employers frequently try to convince their employees not to file a comp claim.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest mistake you can possibly make is do that. If you so choose, you can continue to work and try to work through it and not file an immediate comp claim, because if you're not off work, you may not need that. But the worst thing, and this has happened many, many times in my career, is the employer will tell the employee, go to the doctor, but tell him you did it at home because we don't want a comp claim. And employees will do that. It's hard to find a job in today's day.
Yeah.
So they don't want to risk losing what they have as a good job. Some people have been there for many years. And so once they do that, however, if the employer is not faithful to making sure they get paid, let's assume 6 months later they're now off work, the employer says, well, we're not going to pay you wages while you're off work. You've got to file a comp claim. You come to me and tell me that story. Regardless of whether I believe you, I'm probably not going to take that case, because the medical records are going to now say, this guy got hurt at work. And you can come in and say, well, yeah, but I did that because they told me to. Okay, and that's, again, I probably would believe that, knowing, having done this so many years. But the problem that creates is the judge has to decide whether to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And so as an attorney, we advance costs on behalf of our client, typically somewhere between probably $4,000 and $10,000 coming out of our pockets to litigate the case, pay for it. There's some local doctors here that would charge us $3,000 to testify. We're putting that money into the case, and if we lose the case, guess who loses that money? So that type of history in a medical record is very, very problematic. And I understand why people do it, but it's a bad, bad decision.
What about the threat of firing?
The reality is I get asked all the time, how can my employer let me go when I'm off on work comp? How can they do that? And unfortunately, the comp system does not provide that an employer has to maintain your position. What they have to do is maintain payment of your work comp benefits while you're disabled. So there are, in fact, state agencies that have policies in place that I've dealt with many, many times, where after a certain period of time, position ends. So the LCB, as an example, I believe it's a year. So if you're off work for a year at the LCB, your job's done.
You could heal from your whatever your injury was and say, okay, I'm ready to go back to work. And they say, well, yeah, your job doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly. You get a notice about a year in saying, sorry, your position's done. You can reapply later. So you can reapply as a new employee. And in mom-and-pop sorts of businesses, they've got to fill the position. So the act does not require them to leave your job available to you. Certainly most employers aren't going to say, we're firing you because you had a work comp injury, but they're not going to maintain your position for you. A lot of employers will try to bring you back, however. The flip side of that is a lot of employers, they'd rather pay wages for you to do something than pay work comp benefits.
So they could offer you a position that didn't require the physical demands of your previous job, for example, light duty work, I guess.
Right. That's the second kind of category of litigation that I mentioned earlier we're litigating, which is job offers, return to work offers, light duty work offers. They go back to light duty. Wasn't really well light duty. What did they do? Were they able to keep working? So we litigate probably half of my cases, and I've never looked at the numbers, probably half of the cases that we handle are cases where we're fighting to get people on comp, and the other half is them fighting to get them off, and I'm trying to keep them on.
I've heard about that mainly from, I guess I was reading on the Wire story about it, workers in personal care homes, nursing homes, where if they were like an LPN or something, an aide, and the job required lifting patients, getting them up, get him into a wheelchair, back into bed, or whatever. And then they couldn't do that anymore. offered late duty work.
Right. That happens very often. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the ways the carrier can mitigate, the employer, I guess, more likely, can mitigate the damages. Work comp insurance for an employer is no different than your personal auto insurance. Claims are noted in the record, and premiums are adjusted based upon the type of work that an employee that or an employer that does cuts down trees pays more for their comp insurance than somebody who sits in an office. So those are all categorized by the Ratings Bureau in Pennsylvania, and the same is true for claims. So the more claims you have, the more your premium can be. And so a lot of employers want to try to get people back to work, and many times it's genuine. Many times they mm-hmm. want to get them back. They want to. They have some work. They can take one of those CNAs that would normally have to lift patients, and they can put them in a job where they're just in the cafeteria feeding people who can't feed themselves. Mm-hmm. So I try not to be too pessimistic as a claimant's lawyer for all these years, but some of them are real genuine job offers. Others are nothing more than attempts to get people off comp and make them so miserable that they're going to quit.
The premiums for a workman's compensation insurance are paid totally by the employer. It's not a split thing like some other stuff that you see on your pay stub.
Right, totally by the employer. They pay premiums based upon the number of employees and the type of employment they perform.
Mm-hmm. So a bridge painting company would have much higher risk than an accounting firm, for example?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
No matter how small the operation, mom-and-pop grocery store on a corner, is it still mandated that they have workman's compensation for all their employees?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, what happens more often than not is those mom-and-pop businesses try to avoid the Comp Act because it is quite pricey. My brother ran a contracting business, and I frequently argued with him about his need for insurance because he couldn't afford it. So a lot of, particularly we see this in construction fields, painters, contractors, local guys that are running a mom and pop kind of shop, going out and doing some landscaping or whatever, they will often, unfortunately, because of the cost nature of work comp based upon the risk of their professions, try to avoid the Comp Act and hire people as what we would call an independent contractor. So they call them an independent contractor. They pay them in cash, whatever. Mm-hmm. They don't take any taxes out. So they think that puts them outside of the purview of the Work Comp Act, but it doesn't. And unfortunately, in those circumstances, I've litigated many, many of those claims where that sort of thing happens. We file a petition, discover that the employer is uninsured, and their response is, well, he wasn't my employee, he was just an independent contractor. But the evidence doesn't support that. Employees versus independent contractors are very distinct aspects. If you're an employee, you go where your employer tells you, you do what he does, what he tells you to do, you take your break when he tells you to take it, you go to lunch when he tells you to go to lunch. Independent contractors come and go as they please. They can turn down a job. So even though they call them independent contractors in 90% of those claims, I can establish that they're actually an employee, and that then subjects the employer to potential criminal prosecution. We don't have any control over that, but mm-hmm. once we file it, the one nice thing, however, is 2006, I believe it was, might have been 2001, I don't recall, I'm sorry, the Pennsylvania legislature put into place the Uninsured Employer Guarantee Fund that covers employees of employers who don't have comp, and that entity will then pay, and then they're the ones that go after the employer.
So an employer who, for whatever reason, did not participate and did not buy workman compensation, they could face criminal prosecution?
Absolutely. It is. If you read the work comp journals, you'll see many reports of prosecutions month in, month out, where employers have been prosecuted for failing to maintain work comp insurance, even under those circumstances where they tried to skirt the edges of the system mm-hmm. to categorize somebody as an employee versus an independent, or independent contractor versus an employee.
I've read about that independent contractor thing, but that brings up another question. What about volunteers? You know, there are some organizations where, you know, they have volunteers that are helping, and
volunteers.
Concerns about liability. Right. You know, if you're a volunteer, you can be hurt as easily as somebody yeah. who's an employee.
Employees are covered by the Comp Act, not volunteers. Not okay. even, there's some exceptions. As an example, a casual employee may not even be covered if they just come in a couple hours a week here and there. So it depends on the nature of the relationship.
Casual employee, I've never heard that term before.
Welcome to the Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Act.
Is that the same as a part-time employee?
Well, no, it's not. It's a little bit different. So it's a case-by-case scenario as to what their actual relationship is. So you have to establish that you're an employee if you want work comp. Mm-hmm. If you're not, then you have to find some other basis to sue your employer.
Do you have to be on the job, or is it sufficient just to be at the workplace? I'm talking about a claimant now,
right.
obviously.
Very close question, and my answer, unfortunately, is it depends.
Uh-huh.
So if you're at the place of employment at a reasonable time before your shift, you come in 10 minutes before your shift, but you haven't actually punched in, you slip and fall on the employer's premises, you're probably covered. You're pulling into the parking lot in your car, but you're not really there yet, you get hit by another car, you're probably not covered. So there are very, very fact-specific issues that need to be addressed in each and every one of those cases to determine, and it may be simply ultimately the judge has to decide how close was he to being actually in the course and scope or in furtherance of his employer's affairs. And you can extend that to all sorts of things. If you go to a company picnic, are you covered? Those issues are litigated all the time as to whether you had to be there.
I never thought about that one.
Oh, yeah. We have company volleyball games or company softball league. Are you in the furtherance, the language of the compact, are you in the furtherance of the employer's business? So those are all very fact-specific cases where we have to address those issues.
The reason I ask about the volunteer thing, that seems to me, obviously I don't have any expertise in this area, that could be pretty common.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about people who are helping to clean up or fix up, or what about the people who walk along the highways on Saturday morning wearing the yellow vests picking up litter?
Well, they could be in their employment. So if they're working if they're not volunteering, they're probably not. But if they're volunteering for their employer and their employer is getting the credit, you drive by the sign, it says Joe Smith Plumbing.
Okay, I got you.
And your employer asks you to come out there. So are you then furthering the interests of your employer? I'm a claimant's lawyer. I'm going to file that petition. If you get hit by a car or you fall over the embankment, I'll file that petition every time. And I'll have my client testify that he was there trying to do the right thing and make his employer's business available to everybody and advertising and those sorts of things, and you very well could win that claim.
Do people come to you, claimants who have been denied, do they come to you and you have to say, you know, you talk to them for a while, look at the circumstances, and you have to say, well, I don't know, I don't think you have a case here. I'm sure people wouldn't want to hear that, but do you have to do that once in a while?
Absolutely. That's always a tough thing to do, and there can be various reasons for that, but there are claims that I would not litigate. There are claims that I wouldn't litigate based upon a medical issue, whether the doctor's really willing or based upon the records. I think he's willing to relate what's going on to what's happening at work. You see that kind of as a brief example for you. I've got a guy that has back pain for 10 years. He goes to work, he lifts up a box, his back hurts worse. Well, what caused the problem? Even though he got hurt at work, did something really happen, or is what he's having just a result of his ongoing issue? It might be a work injury, because even in those circumstances, if something changed, I can file a claim and say there's an aggravation of his underlying problem, but you got to have the evidence there that's going to support that.
Can you use your own doctor? Some people might be a little bit suspicious of a company-appointed physician, whether they could trust them or not.
You can't for the first 90 days. Excuse me. We go back to the original process, which is that 90-day comes back up and forth in the compact, comes around over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that they can do, if they do it right, if they post a panel list, they give you the panel list when you're hired, and they give you the panel list after your injury as soon as possible, you are then mandated, as long as they've accepted the claim, and that might just be they're paying your medical bills if you're not off work. If they've acknowledged the claim and they're paying, they can then require that you treat with that panel physician for the first 90 days. After that first 90 days and the claim continues, you can go to anybody of your choosing. You don't have to get their permission. That's, I see that often. A client will come into my office 12 months into an injury and say, well, I'm still treating with a company physician. And some of them are very good physicians. I know many of them. But my first job at that point is to get them to a doctor that I want to treat them, not the company doctor.
Mm-hmm. What about somebody who's injured because they started a fight? This happens in the workplace.
Absolutely.
You get somebody who's belligerent who starts a fight and he gets hurt. Can he file a claim?
Fact specific again. It depends.
I mean, it's almost a self-inflicted injury.
It can be. If the fight had nothing to do with the work, then they're probably not covered. So if I'm at work and I'm trying to be delicate here, but I have a fling with one of my co-employees' girlfriends, and he comes over and starts a fight with me and I get injured, that's an event that occurred because of something outside of work. Probably not going to be covered in work comp.
Even though you were at work.
Yeah, so there's a few exceptions to the general rule, of course. But if I'm at work and me and Joe are stalking and Joe gets mad at me and we start a fight, that's probably going to be a work-related comp claim. Again, you get into all those little intricate facts as to what the cause or what the issues were, and you litigate those issues.
Do people try to game this system a lot, Michael? And maybe from both sides, claimants and insurance companies.
I would say that that's not as common as people would think, as what you think based upon, again, the media portrayal of how bad things are in the insurance industry's portrayal of how all these people are not being truthful. So, yes, I think there are occasions that happens, but I think it's not as frequently as people would contend. More often than not, I think that that opinion is based upon kind of a faulty sense of what's going on. If I'm hurt at work and I have a back pain and I'm in pain every day, you might not think I should be off work, but you're not walking in my shoes. So you're not dealing with that pain day in, day out, waking up trying to get unstiff for the first 45 minutes and taking a bunch of pills. So the contention from the other side would be, oh, you can go back to work. You're not that hurt. But they really don't know that. Mm-hmm. There's very few things that I can put up on a scan, on an MRI, and prove that you have this much pain. So what we frequently fight over is, can they really work or can't they? And that's an opinion. I have, in every case I have in my office, I have a doctor on one side and I have a doctor on my side. And they both have a different opinion, or I wouldn't be involved. And so we fight over whose opinion's actually right.
I have one final question for you, and I should have asked this earlier, but it just occurred to me. Is there a deadline, a timeline under which you have to file for a workman's compensation claim? How far can you go back? Can I say,
not far.
You know, 7 years ago I was hurt on a job?
Not likely. So there's two initial statutes. One is notice. You have to provide notice to your employer within 120 days. If you fail to notify your employer until 6 months later after your accident,
too bad.
Too bad, too sad. Mm-hmm. If you have notified them, you have 3 years to file an initial claim. So anytime within 3 years. You wait till 3 years and 10 days and call me, I can't help you. There's other statute of limitations that govern cases once a claim has been recognized. You may have, if you go back to work, you may have 3 years to reopen your case, or you may have 500 weeks, which is 9.5 years. So if you don't open your claim in fact, you might have 500 weeks plus an additional 3 years in certain cases. So there's various, all sorts of intricate statutes.
This is why you need to talk to an attorney, folks, if you've got a problem here. Our guest, and Michael, it's been very enlightening. I didn't know a whole heck of a lot about workman's comp.
You got a brief primer.
I don't know. I feel like I could almost take a test on it, or at least parts of it right now. No, I'm serious. Thanks very much. Michael Russell, who is a certified specialist in workers' compensation law. We couldn't have talked to a better guy. He's with the local law firm of Conlon Tarker, and they're on East Diamond Street in Butler. Folks, if you need an attorney, whether it's for workman's comp issues or any legal issue, and you don't have an attorney and you need some help, you can contact the Butler County Bar Association. Janice Hackett is the executive director there. She's not going to recommend a specific attorney. Obviously, they don't do that, but she can give you a list of several who practice a lot in that particular area, and then you can choose, but it can get you started. And we thank Janice for setting up our Ask the Lawyer segments throughout the year. The opinions expressed on the program today are those of our guest, Michael Russell, and me, and they're presented for information and educational purposes only. For specific legal advice, you're advised to contact your own attorney. Thanks again, Michael. Good to have you here.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
More to come on It's Your Turn. We're going to be talking about the wonderful Presence for Patients program that St. Barnabas Health System and St. Barnabas Charities has been running for many, 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 many years. It's up next here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Winter is just around the corner, and with it comes shorter days and longer nights. If you are a Central Electric Cooperative member, now is the time to take advantage of our outdoor lighting program. For as little as $8.50 a month, that's just pennies a day, we will install and maintain your light, giving you peace of mind through these cold, dark winter nights. We take pride in knowing your home, barn, business, and parking lots are illuminated with our outdoor lighting. For more information on brightening your long winter nights with our outdoor lights, call 1-800-521-0570. That's 1-800-521-0570. Or visit our website at www.central.coop. That's www.central.coop. This is Chris Panion with Central Electric Cooperative, powering everyday life for 80 years. Central Electric Cooperative is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
Join Armstrong and NBC as the Sunday Night Football Bus comes to Firebird's Woodfire Grill in Cranberry on Saturday, December 9th from 5 to 7 p.m. Fans can enjoy a fully interactive experience inside and outside the bus.
Are you searching for the perfect holiday gift for someone you care about? Well, look no further. Personalized photo calendars from Sir Speedy Printing are great gifts that last the whole year. Everyone will love the personal touch that you were able to put into your gift and appreciate the memories that come back with every picture you chose. Be the hero of holiday gifts with the help of Sir Speedy Printing on South Main Street in Butler. Stop in or give us a call today.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Welcome back, folks. Dave Malarkey here, and on this next segment of It's Your Turn on WISR today, we're going to be chatting about the wonderful Presence for Patients program that's been spearheaded for many, many years, decades actually, by St. Barnabas Health Systems and St. Barnabas Charities. Valerie Day Wilden is with us on the phone from St. Barnabas. Valerie, nice to talk to you. Nice to have you with us here today.
Well, thanks for having me, and in advance, Merry Christmas.
Indeed, yes. I had a chance to talk for just a few seconds off the air with Valerie. I knew that the Presence for Patients program had been around for a long, long time. 30-some years, Valerie. Wow.
Yes. Back in 1984, the president at St. Barnabas realized that there were Toys for Tots programs and things that were typically aimed at children at Christmas time, and mm-hmm. thought about the lonely patients at our St. Barnabas nursing home at the time. So he recruited three other facilities who were obviously interested in having their patients visited, and started Presence for Patients. A year later, WPXI came on to the program and promoted it, and it just took off since then. So each year, tens of thousands of patients are reached by Presence for Patients and the community.
I knew that the folks at WPXI Channel 11 had been involved for a long, long time. We're news partners with them, and we know them very well. In fact, I don't know. They may still have been WIIC whenever they first got involved. I don't know. It goes back a long, long time.
I think you're right. I know Don Riggs at the time had a show that started on WIIC, and mm-hmm. so we still remember that, but not everyone has memories that go back that far.
Now, one thing that we need to, and I think this is a pretty widespread misconception that people don't realize, Presence for Patients, there's a lot of participating facilities here in our area. It's not just St. Barnabas, right?
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because that is something that people sometimes think, and our facilities are part of the program, but there are hundreds of facilities in Western Pennsylvania who are served through the Presence for Patients program. And there are, I believe, 14 or 15 right in Butler. So Valencia Woods at St. Barnabas and the Arbors at St. Barnabas are two, but there's also Sunnyview and Fairwinds Manor and Concordia and others who are part of the program, and their patients are hoping to be reached and remembered at Christmas.
So what is the, if we could boil down the purpose in simplest terms of Presence for Patients, what does it involve?
The heart of the program is just to have someone in a nursing home or a personal care facility touched by someone who says, we remember you, you're important, you are loved by someone. So the easiest way to do that is to bring a gift to that person during Christmas, or actually now, anytime throughout the year, holidays, Valentine's Days, birthdays. But people at Christmas time will shop for something that most patients have requested, something like a sweatshirt or socks or a blanket, and deliver it through the holidays, and just spend a little time with someone who might have been a teacher or our postman or a veteran, someone who should be remembered and cheered up during Christmas. So it's really just the visit that is probably the best gift. We do know that some people are too busy to make the visit and would be happy to sponsor someone else delivering their gift for them. So we do have ways people can donate money so that we will get the gift to the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll try to do our best to make sure that every gift is delivered with a visit, just so that someone has that exchange with another person and sort of a random act of kindness.
I think from the very beginning that's been the thing that impressed me the most about Presence for Patients. The present is nice, but the visit, you got to have the visit, spend a few minutes at least with the person. That could mean more than any present in the world. That could be the biggest present in the world, as a matter of fact.
For sure. Yeah. And we just love when people bring their children. When you are in a nursing home, you often don't hear the voices of children. So you do think of them over the holidays, and it brings back such good memories. So a lot of families make it their activity, and their children come and deliver the gift. And really, even maybe just reading a Christmas story, like The Night Before Christmas, with someone, everyone of every age loves to hear that. It's more the time that you spend, and it really could be just a few minutes, but it means so much to the people who may have outlived their family or have very few visitors and would love to be cheered up over the holidays.
So specifically, how can listeners here in the Butler County area get involved? What would people do? How do they proceed here?
The easiest way to learn about the facilities and the different gift suggestions is to visit presenceforpatients.com or to call 724-443-0011. There are volunteers who will explain how the program works and provide the information for somebody to either donate money or to visit either one person or perhaps a entire facility. I'm thinking most people in Butler know the Pinkertons, and Millie and Dale will be visiting patients at Sunnyview. I think all of them, in fact, over the weeks before Christmas, and delivering gifts to them. So it's a nice group activity as well.
Yeah, I just saw a new press release about a number of folks from here in Butler County have been willing to serve as ambassadors for the Presence for Patients Committee. You mentioned Dale and Millie Pinkerton, Jack Cohen, who's the executive director of the County Tourism Bureau, and many, many others here. State Representative Brian Ellis, County Commissioner Kim Geyer, Butler County Controller Ben Hall, and even our general manager here at Butler Radio Group, Vicki Hinterberger, all Butler County ambassadors for this program, and several others, too. I don't have time to get through the whole list. But
many of them have been involved before, and they can tell you that you feel like you've received the gift, because the smile that you generate on someone's face and the true meaning of Christmas that you celebrate is the gift back to the donor. We've had so many calls and letters saying, thank you for creating this program. It gives us a venue for celebrating what's really important during the holidays. And it does make you feel good, I have to tell you.
And if you want to, you know, the organizers have made it, boy, just about as easy as possible if you want to participate. My information is that for the next week or so, you can drop off unwrapped gifts at the Center for Community Resources. It's on South Main Street in downtown Butler, right across from Miller's Shoes. Drop them off before December 13th, and the ambassadors will deliver them, whether it's Dale or Millie or somebody else. So, but that's pretty convenient, Valerie.
It is. It's really, we're doing our best to make sure that in any capacity that someone wants to support the program, we'll make sure that they can.
What about somebody that wants to make a monetary gift? Will you take that?
Absolutely. On the website, there is a Donate Now section. And then for those people who are doing things in a few seconds, you can give by using your cell phone and texting 41444. Oh, I'm sorry. You text the word give to 41444. And an automatic donation will be made to Presence for Patients and will sponsor a gift.
Well, there's something new this year that we want to talk with Valerie about. I have to take a quick break here for a message or two, but we'll pick up our conversation with Assistant Vice President at St. Barnabas Health System, Valerie Day Wilden. She visits with us on the telephone today. We'll pick up our conversation with her in just a moment or so. One of our sponsors on the program today, it's your turn, is the Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot, Jones Road in Cabot, home to, quite simply, the best, the tastiest turkeys in western Pennsylvania. They're local, so you never get them any fresher. And they offer all-natural, free-roaming turkeys and chickens. Their birds are handled with extreme care. They are specifically fed non-GMO grain. They are preservative-free. They are additive-free. They are delicious. And from now through December 19th, and folks, it's already December 7th, through December 19th, Jones Turkey Farm is lowering the price of a frozen turkey from $3.25 a pound down to just $2.50. That's right. The best turkeys in western Pennsylvania can be yours for just $2.50 a pound. Here, go online for more info. They got all the details there at jonesturkeyfarm.com. jonesturkeyfarm.com. Make your holiday season merry by getting a Jones turkey for the whole family to enjoy. I want to give you another holiday tip from Cummings Candy and Coffee Shop. Cummings on Main Street in downtown Butler, a tradition for more than a century under their red and white awning on North Main Street. If you're looking for a gift, custom gift boxes for clients or for anyone on your gift list, think about choosing from an assortment of chocolate-covered chips or pretzels or graham crackers or cherry cordials from Cummings. They are delicious. I've given them as gifts in the past. They are most well-received. You could also add a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee. They call it the Main Street Roast because it's roasted right there at the Main Street location of Cummings. Call Barry Cummings for more information on the corporate orders and gifts, 287-3287. Yes, they've been serving the Butler community since 1905. Three locations now, Main Street, of course, under the red and white awning. There's also a Cummings at Butler Memorial Hospital, and the newest Cummings, Cummings West, on Route 68, Evans City Road, right on the outskirts of town. Open 7 days a week. Ooh, and peanut brittle is available now, too. And boy, is that ever tasty. Cummings, candy and coffee shops for the holidays. We're talking with Valerie Day Wilson. She is Assistant Vice President at St. Barnabas Health System. Something new this year, I understand, Valerie. I don't have all of the details, but I know one of our local business persons, Kathy Glasgow of Butler County Ford, delivered gifts that the local dealership had collected down at Butler County Ford. And this was for something called Presents for Veterans. Am I correct on that?
So happy to recognize the veterans who are, as we know, the World War II veterans. There are so many of them in facilities because they are elderly at this point in time, and then there's veterans who are younger, mm-hmm. and we want to remember them. And the Butler dealerships, as part of the neighborhood Ford store that has, I think, 81 dealerships in total, have agreed to collect and generate gifts for the veterans who are part of Presents for Patients. So, as you know, there's a veterans hospital, and there are many other veterans throughout the different facilities that will be remembered thanks to the Ford people.
Yeah, that's really nice. By the way, give us some quick advice here for people who are wondering, you know, what would be a good gift for a person at a nursing home? What are some of the most common gift requests?
Well, what we recommend, because sometimes you're not going to know if you're visiting a male or a female, mm-hmm. you want to get a gift that everyone likes. And so over the years, it's been easy for us to narrow it down, because at one point, we actually had a wish list from every single patient. So we would have two or three items that maybe 30,000 patients requested. And as the program grew, and as people are in and out of nursing homes a little faster than they were, say, 20 or 30 years ago, we have learned that people are able to visit a patient who's at that nursing home at that time, and they all want so many things in common. And one of the top requests still continues to be, or the most well-liked gifts, are Steeler and Penguin and Pirate sweatshirts and things that show that they're fans of those teams. I think the Steelers are still the top request, Steeler sweatshirts. But they're also looking for sweatpants. And especially the veterans, things that are patriotic and would decorate their rooms, slippers, and interestingly, gift cards, because the patients and the personal care residents are able to order things off of the internet and can receive them right there. Lottery tickets, pajamas, and blankets. Whether it's a personal blanket for when they're using a wheelchair, or a soft, comfy blanket for their bed.
Some people have wondered whether or not it's appropriate to take kids when they make a nursing home visit. The answer is, not only is it appropriate, I understand it's just terrific. The older folks love it, don't they?
Yes, they do. You can hear them singing and laughing and, I don't know, even those of us in offices all day. I mean, if somebody were to bring their child, everyone comes out and looks because it's just a welcome little face and voice. So someone at a nursing home may not interact with children really all year long. So when people bring their children, it's an extra gift to them. When the donor decides to visit the nursing home, they, through our website, will get the facility's name and phone number and can call to double check that they're going to bring their child and what time would be a good time and would the patient still be at the meal, or maybe there's a bunch of donors throwing a party to give the gift. So all of that can be discussed and arranged by talking to the facility itself.
Yeah, you know, the gift, like Valerie was talking about some of the ideas a couple of minutes ago, that's really a conversation starter for the visit. And you'll never get a better conversation starter than having a young kid or two. That really breaks the ice, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. My son, who's now 21, visited a patient, and he was in the invasion of Normandy, mm-hmm. and he talked about landing and shooting mortars, and interestingly enough, was in a wheelchair, yet had weights next to his bed and lifted weights for his arms and his shoulders. And it was just not what my son expected. And he got to hear about the war. And I think the patient, the gentleman, really enjoyed his questions. So it was a really nice exchange. And we were happy to stay in touch with him, sending letters or stopping in now and then for more than a year. So I know watching it, it was beneficial for both the younger person and the older person.
Yeah, therapeutic for both, that's for sure.
Yes.
St. Barnabas spearheads this whole Presence for Patients program, spearheaded actually specifically by St. Barnabas Charities. Tell us about that arm of the St. Barnabas Health System, Valerie.
Well, the health system serves people in different capacities with different medical services and retirement living options. And the charities represent the founding mission of St. Barnabas, which started in 1900 in downtown Pittsburgh by a layman from the church army who begged for food and clothing for the patients he served at the St. Barnabas home downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So as St. Barnabas has continued to grow, we have never stopped providing charity and free care. So the charities was formed as a fundraising arm for the patients and the residents who live at St. Barnabas or are coming to St. Barnabas without any income or very limited resources. So part of what the charity does is, in addition to raising money for the free care of St. Barnabas patients and residents, we have some outreach programs, and one of them is Presence for Patients. So Presence for Patients benefits those who live at St. Barnabas as well as the tens of thousands outside of St. Barnabas who will receive a gift. So thanks to the generosity of our sponsors, St. Barnabas spearheads Presence for Patients, and all of the donations received are used for gifts for our patients. So it really doesn't necessarily benefit St. Barnabas itself, this Presence for Patients program. It's merely outreach for everybody who is in our surrounding areas who could use a little cheer and visit during the holidays. But the charities itself, through special events and people who donate through their wills and different charitable gifts, we're able to provide more than $7 million in free care to patients at St. Barnabas every year.
Well, annually, $7 million. Wow.
Yes.
Wow. That's fabulous. Folks, if you want more information, and do keep in mind now, we're a week into December already, so if you're moved to participate in this program and help out a little bit, you really can't dilly-dally around too long here because we're very, very close to the holidays. You can get more information, I would think, probably a recap, Valerie, of most of the stuff we've talked about from the Presence for Patients website, right?
Exactly. PresenceForPatients.com. The email is cheer@presenceforpatients.com, and the phone number is 724-443-0011. And for the wonderful people in Butler, there are 15 facilities throughout the county that are ready and waiting. So I'm sure that there would not be very long of a drive for somebody who's popped into a store and bought one extra thing to stop in and share a Christmas visit with someone at a local nursing home.
It's a wonderful program, Presence for Patients, now 34 years old. Valerie Day Wilden, our guest, Assistant Vice President for St. Barnabas Health System. Valerie, nice to talk with you again. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much. And in advance, thanks to the wonderful people in Butler for what they will do for Presence for Patients this year.
And Merry Christmas.
You too.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Valerie Day Wilden. Okay, we have to check midday lottery numbers, so we'll do that, and we'll be back in just a moment or so to talk to you about hearing aid service by Kelly, too. Be right back.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. Pick 2 is 2626. The pick 3, 714. Pick 4, 2465. And the pick 5, 74018. The wild ball for each is 3. Treasure Hunt, 3, 12, 14, 16, and 24. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $30,000.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way. Getting there stops here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening, every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today, Hearing Aid Service by Kelly. Is there someone in your household who seems to be having difficulty hearing these days, or maybe picking up conversation in a room where there's a lot of other ambient noise? Why not get a hearing check? Why not suggest to that? Maybe it's you, or maybe it's your spouse. We recommend Hearing Aid Service by Kelly for personalized one-on-one care. Hearing Aid Service by Kelly. We'll give you a phone number here in a moment. Kelly is interested in helping you hear better. She is not interested in selling you the highest-priced hearing aid. She'll take the time to make sure that everything is just the way you want it, not only from a hearing standpoint, but from a comfort standpoint as well. Your hearing aid will be measured to fit your ear, personalized one-on-one care. Complimentary consultation will get things started. People who have made the change or have consulted with Kelly are so happy that they did. Why not give her a call? What do you got to lose? Call the hearing aid lady. Call Hearing Aid Service by Kelly. Phone number 724-756-4327. 724-756-4327. We thank our guest today, Valerie. We just talked with her, and certainly earlier on the program, what a delightful session we had with Michael Russell, attorney Michael Russell, on the program today. Tomorrow, what's new in the banking industry? Boy, it's changing all the time, right? Yeah. We'll talk about that tomorrow on the program with the CEO of Next Tier Bank. He's Clem Rosenberger. Also on tomorrow's program, a couple of local gentlemen who have climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa. Can you believe that? Boy, am I anxious to hear their story. Steve Sargent and Tom Shutter.